Back to episode 161. Joe, how are you doing?
I'm fine, but I wanted to apologize for my voice. I've had kind of a lingering bronchitis. Probably COVID-21 or something. But it comes and goes. I'll be able to make it, but in case it sounds unusually froggy, that's why. So how are you?
All things considered, very well. It's been again, every week is interesting. I try not to let it get to me.
I thought this week was particularly insane.
Yes, because I think, again, as we move forward in this and the illusion becomes more obvious, that they have to sort of double down on the restrictions and regulations to maintain, you know, the theater, the illusion of a pandemic that never was. And we'll get into the economy and what the end game is here, which is economic warfare and enslavement. Rand Paul, the Senator Rand Paul, has some interesting things to say this week about the lockdown. He called it a big mistake. Whoops. Well, it's a start. I mean, a lot of the stuff here covered, like when you hear Tucker Carlson talking, who's now been targeted by the New York Times, they're making it public where he lives. Hoping that his family gets hurt. I guess the New York Times spent more time trying to really inform the people on this matter as opposed to trying to get Tucker Carlson's family hurt. The public might be in a better position to assess the situation, but that's not the mission of the New York Times or the media in general. But, because Rand Paul Tucker Carlson would go on about radical liberals taking power and the objectives of the political class, but never really letting on that these political figures they're puppets and their strings being pulled by other more powerful people. And that's really where the focus should be on. But we'll take what we can get. Rand Paul, Senator Rand Paul, a Republican from Kentucky, speaks during a news conference after a Senate Republican policy lunch in the Capitol, Washington, D.C. This was on Tuesday, July 21st. Senator Rand Paul, who has frequently criticized the extended lockdown strategy, and Dr. Anthony Fauci denounced the current spate of lockdowns as a big mistake for what they have done to the U.S. economy and society at large. Speaking on Fox News Rundown podcast on Wednesday, Paul said that the lockdowns have caused tremendous damage and did little to curtail the actual virus. For example, Paul noted that states with lockdowns saw spikes in cases alongside states that didn't have lockdowns. We've seen surges in coronaviruses in the midst of a lockdown, Paul said. As reported by Fox News, New York had a lockdown and had 30,000 people die. New York had the worst death rate of any place in the world amid a lockdown. So perhaps a lockdown didn't do any good, and perhaps a lockdown killed our economy, but didn't do anything to stem the tide of the virus. So I see nothing to be admired in New York's lockdown. I see a mountain of people who died, particularly in nursing homes, Paul continued. I don't think the lockdown did them any good. I think it killed the economy, but didn't do any good for trying to contain the virus. As states continue reopening, Paul said the individuals should be assessing their own risk and act accordingly. We need to put it in context that under age of 45, this disease, COVID-19, we're looking at is less dangerous than the seasonal flu, Paul said. Above the age of 45, it's more dangerous than the seasonal flu. If you're in your 80s and you're in a nursing home, we need to do all kinds of things to try to protect you. But I don't think that involves shutting down the economy, and I think that involves other precautions. It's interesting. A friend of mine sent me a picture of his brother who was visiting his aunt at a nursing home locally, and he had to put a mask on, like operating room scrubs, a hair thing, and something over his eyes. And my response was, "How did she know it was him?" <You know? laughs> Yeah. Again, the woman he was visiting, the elderly woman he was visiting, is asymptomatic. He's asymptomatic, but it's all nonsense. Simultaneously, Paul noted that tens of thousands of people undergo chemotherapy every year, but we don't tell the whole country to wear a mask because you might give a virus to person for people who are in chemotherapy. Rand Paul has previously criticized Dr. Fauci, the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, for his handling of the COVID-19 pandemic, arguing his policies emasculated the U.S. economy and the medical system based on flimsy models. So he had some criticism. So that's some welcome criticism, at least, of how they're tepid. Another article that I picked up is on 21st Century Wire. This is more of an editorial. But America's addiction to lockdown is resulting in lower wages. Ever since the current COVID crisis began, governments were quick to assure the public that there was no need to worry because the government would be covering everyone's payroll and handing out cash to businesses that are struggling as a result of the government-issued lockdown. Governments have also been busy buying corporate bonds and debt, too, in order to prop up the stock market and supposedly stave off a major economic calamity. Well, the catastrophe came all right, but unfortunately, the worst is yet to come. As it turns out, businesses have been forced lower wages in order to stay afloat during the government-induced economic shutdown, potentially damaging labor market for a decade. Millions of Americans who managed to hold on to their jobs amid the coronavirus pandemic have seen their incomes drop as employers slashed wages and hours to weather what they expected to be a short-term shutdown. Now, with the virus raging and the recession deepening, those cuts that were meant to be temporary could turn out permanent, or even pave the way for further layoffs that could portend deep damage to the labor market and the economy, because so many workers who have kept their jobs have less money to spend than a few months ago. Numbers haven't received the same attention as job losses, which are highlighted every week in government data, but at least 4 million U.S. workers have received pay cuts since February, even as they continued working the same job, and millions have seen pay freezes, according to economists from the Federal Reserve and the University of Chicago, who put out a study analyzing the data from the payroll processing company ADP. Other estimates put it higher. Roughly 7 million workers have likely received a dock in pay, according to Mark Zandi, the chief economist at Moody's Analytics. Combined with those who have been forced to log fewer hours, the number climbs to 20 million people, or 1 in 8 workers, who've seen their paycheck shrink over the past few months, even as they continue to work, underscoring how much harm the shutdowns have caused beyond layoffs alone. I was listening to Peter Koenig talk today on a show. He's a former economist with the World Bank, but he kind of calling the whole thing a hoax. But he mentioned the economics effects. He cited a forecast from the International Labor Organization that as many as 58% of the global workforce will be either unemployed or underemployed within a year if these policies persist. And of course, that also will result in a lot of suffering, a lot of social upheaval and problems, crime, starvation. In some countries, you're talking famine, people starving to death. Of course, that will cause mass migrations and upheavals, population upheavals. So it's a disaster. Here's another interesting piece. UK government panicked as fraudulent COVID death count is revealed. Today, the public have been told via the mainstream press that the UK Health Secretary, Matt Hancock, is now looking into how data regarding coronavirus fatalities is being reported. This despite months of reporting by dissenting journalists who have been challenging the official government line raising this issue. We're told all this comes after the Public Health England confirmed that people who are dying of natural causes are being counted as COVID deaths by virtue of the fact they had previously tested positive for the virus. Officials are calling this strange anomaly, but it's much more than that. Quite clearly, Hancock and the Tory government are implementing damage control here, as this scandal is rapidly being disseminated across the public discourse, and for fear that the wider scale of statistical fraud might be revealed. By calling for an urgent review, the Johnson government hoped to avoid a likely backlash from what can only be described as a historic fiasco for Public Health England and Westminster. all of the government's seemingly half-baked policies, from lockdown to shutdown, normal NH services, making a de facto COVID-only health service, to nonsensical ad hoc social distancing regulations, mass testing, contact tracing, to mandatory masks, to school closures, travel bans, quarantines, to rush to push out an experimental coronavirus vaccine, are all predicated on what seems very likely to be a false perception that COVID-19 is an unprecedented pandemic and therefore requires unprecedented mitigation measures. It seems the government can no longer hide that it has been counting scores of people who've died from natural causes as COVID deaths. One can only guess just how many deaths have been wrongly recorded in this way. A source says that we noticed the hospital deaths were falling, but community deaths were up and wondered why. It turns out you could have been tested positive in February, recovered, then hit by a bus in July, and you'd be recorded as a COVID death. Essentially, PHE is counting people if they die of any cause at any time after previously testing positive for COVID. So by this government measure, one can never recover from the virus. They simply keep the death meter running forever, which is effectively padding their statistics and thus justifying any policy which is being drifted out each day. This can only be described as a fraudulent data gathering and recording by health officials, which has unfortunately been swallowed unquestionably by politicians and the mainstream media for the last 4.5 months. What's more, these figures are concealing an even bigger scandal. More likely, these numbers are driving excess mortality. In other words, the inconvenient truth that most of these are in fact lockdown deaths, not COVID deaths. So it's the effect of the lockdown, not the virus, that is driving any increase in death rates. Interesting enough, we saw a stat today that in Ireland, where they're in a harsh lockdown, total deaths in April 2020 were less than total deaths in April 2018. So cogitate on that. Here in the States, more statistical fraud. Florida, Texas, Colorado all caught inflating COVID cases and deaths. It's long been suspected that certain countries in U.S. states have been padding their statistics regarding both cases and deaths attributed to the coronavirus. Only yesterday it was revealed how U.K. health officials have been double-counting COVID deaths through creative administrative record-keeping. More evidence reveals how similar shady practices are being employed by states' officials across America. Well, it turns out that under the, I think, HHS is a program that was passed under the CARES Act, is the more COVID deaths you have, the more money your state gets. So there's a built-in incentive to count positive test results, which is dubious, which are dubious to say the least, as cases, and you get more money from the Department of Health and Human Services. This is why you have all this counting. Miami mayor asked people to wear face masks in their own homes to reduce the spread of the coronavirus within families. So he wants you to wear a mask at home too.
Sure.
Now, someone sent this to me, and I commented. It says, "Yeah, it's stupid, and it's even stupider than I think." A couple months ago, the New Jersey governor said you should also socially distance at home. But there's a method to their stupidity. World Health Organization officials and various public health commissars here in the United States have suggested that people can be removed from homes, particularly children, if the domicile doesn't have enough square footage to socially distance or enough bathrooms. You see, this ludicrous or ridiculous suggestion that you should wear the mask at home all the time too lends further legitimacy to wearing public masks in public. Because we tend to focus on the absurdity of this as opposed to the absurdity of wearing masks in public. And, you know, there have been as many as 14 random controlled tests regarding the efficacy of said face masks in preventing the spread of diseases. And they said beyond the mechanical use of them, there's no benefit to them at all. They don't prevent any spread of diseases. I mean, if you're sneezing and it prevents the actual material from spreading, it can do that. But these masks are worn in mechanical settings. What they mean by that is it's worn in an acute setting like an operating room where you don't want to spit or drool in an open wound. But it really, as far as just wearing them around in public places and going into stores, driving your car, riding a bicycle, some gyms are requiring people to wear them as they exercise or as they enter and exit the building, there's no benefit whatsoever. It's just, again, it goes back to what I said before. the mask mandates, there's no science behind it. Even Anthony Fauci said that it's symbolic. It is a sign of obedience. It's also a way of marking people who who may not be obedient. So it, you know, you can target the people who may not, you know, be following the script. But it, what it does do is it maintains the theater, the illusion of a pandemic it never was, which creates the political environment where they can continue the lockdowns, continue to grind the economy, keep it underwater, keep waterboarding the economy until ultimately you suffocate or drown.
Yeah, absolutely correct. You know, you can see that the, I mean, you know, the pandemic is fake. You brought up examples of how we can understand that. And therefore, since this is the case, it's just clear that the reason that it was being done was for the fallout from the government lockdown, which would have been easily understood by the government beforehand, and they could see that simply by basically, particularly businesses where they control the licenses of, like restaurants and, mm-hmm. and things like that, which are so much of the employment in that state, that all they had to do was simply tell them that they couldn't open up, and they would be able to basically wreck the economy permanently. And I just wanted to share one particularly important data point. And I found this, I was trying to figure out where I could get it. The government doesn't produce it, but Yelp does. So on Yelp, businesses that have closed had put a notification on Yelp that they were shut down. But then Yelp also gave them the capacity to notice the public if they were shut down permanently. And so it has turned out that Yelp now can state that 55% of the businesses that were closed have shut down for good. So think about that. 55% of the businesses that were closed have, you know, not all businesses represent themselves on Yelp, but this is a pretty good statistical sample. Just to give you an idea of how big the sample is, in 1 month, this last month, over 15,000 businesses notified Yelp that they were never going to open up again. Yelp also pointed out that of restaurants, 6 in 10 that had been listed as being closed during the pandemic have notified Yelp that they will never reopen. 6 out of 10. So this is, you know, represents tens of millions of jobs, an enormous fraction of the integrated economy is now being simply subtracted. And this was all seen by the government before they did any of this. I mean, they have good economic forecasting models, and they certainly knew this was going to happen. So we are being attacked by the organization that controls the government. And the way the attack is taking place is they are destroying our economy. This will have a systematic approach to like a vortex that will continue to go down, because as you know, the 40% of businesses that will try to reopen will not have a full economy when they do open up to benefit from. And so you're going to lose another, you know, fraction almost immediately. And then that will have another cascade, and then down you go to zero.
Yeah, it's so, like kind of a second and tertiary die-off.
Yeah, exactly. And so this is what they have done. And the mask wearing is, you know, just the symbol of obedience. And it is the symbol that the virus is real, even though, as you point out, you know, a lot of like people are quite, you know, you pointed out that the UK has fake data. Well, I mean, obviously the US has fake data too. And the way they do it is sort of interesting. And I think people should, you know, sort of should be aware of this, is that they will state that you know, like Florida, Texas, and South Carolina set records for new daily deaths. This actually was reported last week, ABC. Okay. Now, what does that mean? Well, you have to look into the grammar of the sentence and understand that the word reporting, because if you actually then trace back to the CDC website, which has all of the actual official mortality based on the disease, you'll see that they don't have anywhere near these numbers, right? So what they're doing is, and this is not, I'm not exaggerating, this is actually the case, is the states will pick a time when they release the deaths that have been basically reported to them. They don't have to attribute the death to a particular day. You see, if you, when you hear the sentence is read that Florida, Texas, and South Carolina set records for new daily deaths, right, reporting 156, 129, and 69 respectively, a person would naturally think, oh my God, COVID is killing everybody, you know. The fact is that if you went to the website for those particular days, there was like 10 deaths or something that were actually, what they had done is they had amalgamated a lot of deaths that had occurred previously and then just reported them as a group at a particular time.
So there's like a backlog, and then they
kind of. And then media then picks it up and then puts out this as the scare number. And then you put your mask on because you're so afraid.
And of course, these are people who are dying who test positive for COVID. Maybe, well, if you can believe that.
Okay. Absolutely. Now,
it's interesting that you mentioned like Arizona and Florida. Well, these are the retirement area. So,
yeah. Right. Well, see, and then the other one, but you see, then you have to look inside the number. Say you have, well, there's 156. It wasn't all that day, but, you know, it was in the last couple of weeks. This is a terrible thing. We have to be afraid of COVID. Well, wait a second. If you go to the CDC website and then look at their actual death counts, and this is at least they're supposed to be relating to real dead bodies. So you look at the week that ended July 11th, and you'll see there's 3,331 deaths. Okay, that's it's way down from the 17,000 in April. No reason to keep us locked down. I mean, we've flattened the curve. Everything seems reasonable. But if you look further, you can see it's far worse than that in terms of how the propaganda is working, because they also list another category. And unfortunately for the propagandists, they list it on the same page, so it's not too hard to see. Because they have, for example, there's other components, which, for example, like deaths involving COVID and pneumonia, right? So in other words, this number is more than half of the 3,331, right? But in the COVID number, it isn't broken out. And this is the scare number. The scare number is anything, like you were saying, that, you know, if there's any tangential relationship to COVID, it's a COVID death. But in the CDC's own website, they say that more than half of them are in fact COVID with pneumonia, right? And then beyond that, there's also the flu, which is another number which is not particularly large, but it adds to the fakeness of the COVID number as standalone, because the COVID number standalone is less than, if you subtract out the people who had pneumonia and the flu from it, you're ending up with like way less than half of 3,000, okay? But now you get into then the quality of what's left. And this is, like you were saying, that in the last week, there's been literally, a dozen stories about fake data of people who died on motorcycles that, you know, were lumped into this. So, And then, of course, on top of all that, you haven't even gotten to the comorbidity problem of people who have, you know, they have compromised immune systems because they have chemotherapy or diabetes. They're in their 90s and obese. I mean, there's all sorts of reasons that are comorbid. That would be if you take the 1,500 deaths that are left after you get done with the CDC hashing out. of that 1,500, probably 95 would be basically not dying from COVID, but with COVID, perhaps because of the testing positive. So now you're down to just about no one. And again, this would go to that extreme position of, you know, COVID doesn't even exist as a medical phenomena. And I think you can actually make a really good argument that that is the case. I'm not sure. I mean, you'd have to, now you're down into like 100, 200 people in a week. I mean, how could they even?
Really, well, I mean, people die every day. I mean,
right. Three million
people die in the United States. A little over 3 million people die a year in the United States any given year. Divide that by, you know, how many was that, 10,000 a day?
Yeah.
If I do my math right, is that right?
Well, I think close enough.
Yeah. So, but now all these deaths are now being reported. And of course, no one's reporting on the explosion in the suicide rate, the explosion in addiction rates to opioids or alcohol. And, you know, domestic abuse and the unemployment rate. What's happening? How many people are facing eviction in the next few weeks? I heard that there are millions of families, or 28 million families are facing eviction in the next few months because of the economic situation. Now, what's going to be the effect on their health when they're homeless, right? And so there's no talk of this. So they're fixating on these bogus death rates. Reports, and the reality is there's been this planned demolition of the U.S. and even the global economy, all under the cover of this hoax, this phantom virus. You know, it's like it's invisible, yet it's we're supposed to believe, just take it on their word that it, you know, take their word at face value that this thing exists. But there's nothing really in the mortality rates or even what we're observing in the reality that suggests anything unique out there. And like I said, there's people dying every day from various things, generalized symptoms, it's toxicity, it's poor health, age, you know, disease of various types. You can attribute to COVID, fine, just get the numbers up. But there's nothing new, really. A lot of people die every day in the world.
Right. And I wanted to just give like another data that, I really want to get the actual number of suicides since the lockdown started having it.
Well, the one effect. Place in California claimed they'd gotten there like their annual quota, if you will, by March. It was by the end of April or something.
Right. But I have a data point. I haven't been able to get the numbers, and I'm pretty sure they're just keeping this under wraps. But there is a data point which is some track of the national calls into suicide hotlines. Mm-hmm. So this is a private sector, basically, number. It isn't kept by the government. But they are reporting a 600% increase. 600%. Now, how many people kill themselves in the United States in a year? Over 100,000. So if you're six times that of actual, you're looking at something that would be five times larger than the COVID fatalities.
Well, if you kill yourself because you're depressed or you're fearful because of the
COVID,
are you a COVID death?
Absolutely.
You know,
your COVID death if you you know, gag watching the Major League Baseball players take the knee and choke to death, you would be a COVID death.
Yeah, I mean, I was watching. I saw some video clips on YouTube about the various opening day games. And you have these teams playing in empty stadiums, and they're either YouTube was doing it or the video was doing it. They're piping in fake cheering.
Sure.
And then they have cardboard people in the background, like effigies of people in the stands. I guess you could buy those or something.
You know, that's, you can. I think it costs $80. And you get a cardboard representation of yourself, and then you would be in your stand in the seat that you would have. I know they're selling this for NFL games.
Does the cardboard representation of yourself pay $15 for a beer?
It does, and if it falls over, it's a COVID death. So just to segue, I mean, I suppose you saw the Major League Baseball players all taking the knee.
Yes.
You can really see kind of the outline of where this all goes. basically they're swapping out the Holocaust propaganda technique against Europeans in the United States, but probably I'm sure it'll spread, but certainly here, with the idea that systematic racism is basically equivalent to the Holocaust. And so the taking of the knee and and the accepting of black on white violence, basically the destruction of the economy, even, I think these are all, you know, justified acts based on trying to find a way to not just create retribution, but punishment. And we've mentioned on other shows that this is pretty funny in a way, because if you look at the sponsors of Black Lives Matter, you look at Google, Facebook, Amazon, you know, Coca-Cola, you look at the board of directors, you'll see lots of people that didn't really have a history of caring about black lives as they came up through the corporate jungle. And yet now they are using Black Lives Matter as a battering ram to take advantage of the situation they've created, particularly in the cities, mm-hmm. where when you don't have business activity on the streets are vulnerable. When it's just flat out, they are vulnerable. And so with that condition, they can then send in Black Lives Matter, which is, you know, the public face, but is attached to, and the other side, to Antifa, which is the violent action. And now you basically make sure that the businesses, the white owned typically businesses, are will never have a chance even to reopen. Because if you look at the violence in Minneapolis and Seattle, I'm sure you saw the films in Portland, you know, these cities aren't going to reopen. I mean, when could they? How could
they? Well, the political leadership there, the political class, if you will, simply are systematically destroying the cities that they're entrusted to govern. That's the impression I get when you look at Lightfoot in Chicago, the bizarre mayor of Chicago. Then you have that idiot Wheeler out in Portland, who's all upset now because federal troops are sent in to protect federal property. But he's not maintaining order in his own streets. And all of a sudden, now they're all worried about their democracy, our democracy, when the country's been in lockdown for almost, 5 months, and people have been subject to quarantine, not forced out of work. They've political convention. I mean, Republican, we're not going to have a convention this year for nomination of the Republican Party for the President of the United States.
They'll have one to be online.
They've essentially suspended the Constitution because they've prevented people from having the right to a peaceful assembly and also to practice religion, go to church, and this has all been done, and people have largely accepted it. I mean, the churches have accepted it.
Absolutely. I mean, and it'd be really interesting. I mean, you look at de Blasio, Christie, Garcetti, there are some mayors that you just know are on the inside of the secret society or lifetime actors and are just part of the guild that's destroying the Europeans. But it would be fascinating to hear how they pitch this to someone like Lightfoot in Chicago. Because obviously she's had some, you know, wink and a nod, and some verbiage has been given her to explain, you know, something like, I'm just going to theorize that they came to her and said, look, we really have to make, you know, profound social change. This is the time that we can basically take advantage of the chaos, and we can move your people, the black American who are so worthy because of all of the systemic racism, we can maneuver them into a position of really controlling the cities. I'm just theorizing, but something.
Well, I mean, the network's been identified. The most obvious one, the one that people are familiar with, is the Open Society Foundation, George Soros' operation, his funding of mayors and DAs and sheriffs, these agents of chaos that have been installed in prior years to carry out this very thing. And that's why you see that, you know, like whether it's Krasner in Philadelphia, who's threatening to arrest federal agents now. And so, yeah, I mean, it's they're dedicated. De Blasio is another one. Cuomo is another one. And the governor is they're simply dedicated to imposing their dictatorial rule under the cover of a public health crisis. They have these vague general emergency powers, which are nowhere in the Constitution, by the way, because when you have a situation where the governor assumes the power or a mayor to impose laws and then enforce them, that is a violation of the guarantee clause of the Constitution. The Constitution of the United States guarantees each state have a Republican form of government, and it's not a Republican form of government if the executive is also empowered in making the laws. So they're in violation of the Constitution, which would seem to justify federal intervention at this point. But that would require, again, a president who isn't feckless or co-opted. I think there's a combination of both there.
I do think you're going to see it. I think actually this ends in civil war. I think that will be the prelude to the starvation. But I do believe that as I see the momentum and the trends, that there will be a moment when the National Guard is sent in, basically because, I mean, they will attempt to and will achieve an entire city as an autonomous zone.
Well, I mean, we're faced with a situation. The situation is this grave. Is you have governors and mayors who are dedicated to grinding their local economies down for a broader political, I'd argue, geopolitical reason. I think they're serving transnational interests at this point. They're foreign agents. The Irish writer John Waters said of the political class, he was speaking specifically of his in Ireland, but I think this applies to ours, that we have to look at them as sort of as an alien class now. They're not...
That's a great way, and we need to understand the alien class and identify who they are. And if we don't do that, we'll never basically understand, you know, the motivation as to what's going on. Because, I was talking earlier today with family members, and they're just so confused. They don't think they're confused, but they just have no understanding of the process they're in. They actually are afraid of COVID. They are, you know, if they're going to... like one of them is going to go on a boat trip, so she's going to be sequestered for 2 weeks before the boat trip, and the mother, who isn't going to be with the father and the daughter, who are scientists, are going to be on this research ship. She's going to sequester at the same time by going away to another apartment, right? So in other words, here are people with no symptoms that will physically separate their entire family for 2 weeks, just because they are afraid of a virus that isn't killing anyone. So this is really, you know, mass hysteria.
Yeah, it has a 99.7%.
Yeah, 99. This is the entire population. Yes. It's 99.74, but they're younger. They're like in their 50s. I mean, this would be 99.98 or something. Just some ludicrous.
Recovery. I mean, they have a better chance of dying in a car accident on their way.
They have a lot of chance of dying on the boat.
And so it's like, it's just, there's no,
just ridiculous. But this is what's going on. Now, my, you know, the point I was trying to make is that, so we can't really get a kind of protest of the right sort going on when you have such a large fraction of the population that is just believing the propaganda. They can just be driven into fear anytime that they want. And so when you think about, you know, like understanding the political class and what they're doing, we really need to get the normie to the point where they're questioning. You know, they just have to start asking the question of, is this in any way coherent, what's going on? Because otherwise, what you'll see is, you're going to see a deliberate creation of civil war. They'll use the Antifa, combined with some Freemason like they did in Minneapolis, where you had the umbrella people come in to start off the revolution. So they'll bring that kind of a cohort in, and there'll start to be violence against middle class areas. Now, at that point, the middle class will do the best they can to respond, but I'm sure now you'll get National Guards. And at this point, it's just all out civil war, because
this is a dangerous point. Because we saw what happened to the McCluskeys in St. Louis, where they're
yeah.
a gated community, mind you. It wasn't even a public street. A gate was knocked down. People were trespassing, which to me is an imminent threat if you do that. But the local prosecutor, who is also a Soros-funded prosecutor down there, brought charges against the couple. And then the attorney general stepped in and vacated the charges. Now, he probably should go a step further and also bring charges against the DA for abuse of power.
It was interesting what happened. The charges were brought against the woman, mm-hmm. the wife, because she had brandished the gun in a threatening manner, which is against the law if you're not being threatened, which, of course, is a preposterous position. But they dropped the charges ultimately because they found that the gun wasn't able to be fired. I don't know if you saw this, but
that
the gun,
was telling.
Yeah, the gun mechanically was not able to be fired. It couldn't fire a round. It had something. The firing pin wasn't correctly placed. It wasn't a weapon to be used. But the DA's office then fixed the gun so it could be a weapon.
Well, that's a crime.
And this is actually quite real. Now, that was unfortunately reported. Information got out, and then when it did, they dropped the charges, I believe, were dropped at that point. So this was, you can see, again, this is just a psychological, kabuki theater. They're just making the middle class feel as though they have nowhere to turn. This is, and they're not in any way, supported by the government. This is part of the new, kind of Black Lives Matter reality, where the white middle class will be pushed down into they will be the lowest class. I mean, they will literally be the fentanyl brigade in the autonomous zone. And the inner cities will be, multicultural, but there won't be Europeans inside the power structure. They'll be, whatever they have. And this will be, at least this is the workers' paradise that I think will be sold to, the people who are followers of Black Lives Matter, the young African-American males and things. But of course, it's just a impossible fantasy. This is about as real as the workers' fantasy that was given to the proletariats in the Bolshevik Revolution. I mean, this isn't going anywhere in terms of any kind of political or economic power. This is just a transition period during which population is going to be dramatically reduced. And Tim, if you think about all of the transition periods, right, when the Masonic Judaic rulers do a transition, you always have population reduction. I mean, think about how often that happens. The best example would be the Bolshevik mm-hmm. Revolution, but certainly the French Revolution, certainly the Ukrainian situation. I mean, when you have these deliberate cultural upheavals where things just go upside down, the chaos is always a period of time when they can start really reducing population. And that's what I'm afraid we're looking at in the next couple of years.
Well, you need someone, you'll need someone with the authority, the agency, and sort of the harshness to deal with, not to be feckless. And that's where this idea that I thought was interesting, I think it's valid, all given the seriousness of the situation, is if indeed the governors and various local officials are in violation of the Constitution they swore to uphold, they need to be taken out. And this is where you can appeal to the federal government. The federal government can step in and monitor and enforce voting rights laws, and can nationalize the National Guard to integrate high schools and colleges in the various states under the guise of integration. I mean, in civil rights, they can certainly step in and protect people's civil liberties, the right to go out and earn a living so you can live. You all have a right to life. In order to exercise that right, you have to be able to earn a living. And that's being consciously, purposely suppressed by the governors and state officials, because it's sort of this is how it's been instrumentalized or organized through Agenda 21, perhaps, or strong city initiatives, through the Event 201. These agents have been set up, and John Rappaport, he suggested that Donald Trump sent in federal agents to take out or arrest a few governors and reinstall Republican government and free up the economies, because these governors are tyrants. And you don't have to do it to 42 or 45 governors. You do it to maybe 10 of them, and the message is sent. But that would require a president who at least recognizes the seriousness of the situation or feels free to act upon it. He may be cornered himself or maybe part of it. I don't know. I honestly don't know. But basically, this is what John Rappaport said. He said, think of it as the country's been invaded. It's been invaded, and then you have areas that are occupied. And so then you got to send in the army to liberate it. And that's what the country is facing right now with these governors and mayors, that they are foreign agents, and they need to be taken out. They need to be routed out of office and arrested, because they're guilty of treason. And the penalty for treason, for I understand, does carry a death penalty.
Of course, and it couldn't be more clearly treasonous. And this is just their behavior, which combined with the flimsy excuses and the fake numbers in terms of the, mm-hmm. the pandemic. But once you broke down some of that and got someone to actually talk about what they really understand, man, you would see treason with capital T, mm-hmm. because they would have to admit that there was information being exchanged about how to bring about this catastrophic situation.
But we have that. I mean, we have that with the Rockefeller Foundation and the Lockstep paper. We have that with Event 201. If you were having an investigation, you could identify the nodes of communication and networking between Bill Gates, the World Health Organization, and Gavi and Imperial College of London, and the fact that these various the states relied on the various entities or organizations that are directly funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and tying back to the World Economic Forum, which 2 years ago called for a Great Reset, the book written by Klaus Schwab at the World calling for a Great Reset, and the calling in 2021 to exploit the crisis of the coronavirus to reconfigure and radically change the global economic system. Now, how are they going about doing that? They can't go about doing that unless they engage in all types of subterfuge and subversion, which we're seeing today. And that requires an investigation. You say it's a conspiracy theory. Yes, it's a conspiracy theory. There is a laws against conspiracy in the federal statutes. So conspiracies do exist. And I do think, at the very least, that even a cursory look gives sound or at least reasonable suspicion that there has been a conspiracy hatched to demolish or do the planned demolition of the global economy and to reset everything under the terms which the oligarchs find more favorable to them, which ultimately is going to involve not only the miseration of much of the world, but also a great population reduction. Because that's the result of all this, all the disruption that's going to occur from the economic shutdown. I mean, we engage the economic activity to gain our sustenance. So if you shut it down, what happens? And you can't paper it over with government relief checks. Because at the end of the day is you can print all the money in the world you want, but something has to be produced.
Yeah, you wonder when the currency will collapse. As long as the public is in the dream world of the dollar's value is relative to other fiat currencies. They look at the dollar relative to the index with the yuan, the euro. But the fact is, that's all meaningless. When the reset occurs, it will be the dollar doesn't work in terms of its value to food. Mm-hmm. That's when you're going to see the actual evaporation of the dollar. Is when it doesn't work in terms of providing food. And believe me, Tim, starvation is definitely on the horizon. It is on. I mean, people can't see it because, all of the fast food restaurants are still working, pumping out their toxicity. But if you look into the numbers, you can see that the food chain is getting weaker and weaker because, as you just pointed out, it's just commonsensical that if you subtract, you know, half of the economic activity, you're going to lose a large fraction of food production. And therefore, you will have people starving. And, and that, I think, is when you're going to, you know, you're going to see the real value of the fiat currencies. They'll all collapse overnight. The getting back to the point about Trump arresting the traitors, of course he should. And of course, the grounds to do so are virtually self-evident. But he won't, because I'm afraid he's part of the deal. And I'm afraid what he will do is, rather than arrest the perpetrators, who are obvious and easy to identify, what he will do is he will order in army troops to basically lock down cities that have violence. So in other words, that's what I think you're going to end up seeing in these cities eventually, is just a continuation of the destruction of the violence, and then eventually the U.S. Army will come in and there will be martial law. And just like with the lockdown we were experiencing, the martial law is not going to go away. The martial law will be permanent. Because the other elements of destruction, the starvation and the racial tension and violence, they will become permanent conditions. And so therefore the army will have to be there permanently. And basically, you're, as far as I can tell, what you'll end up with in the United States is a holodomor, where you'll have lockdowns, which are basically keeping people in certain areas so they can't move around and try to feed their starving bodies.
Well, that's already happening with suggestion about like Cuomo's tri-state deal with Connecticut and New Jersey, quarantining people who come in from high-incident states, whatever that means. That's where the test rates are spiking. And there's all types of questions how you enforce that. And of course, it's unworkable given the current conditions. But what it does is it throws that out there, the idea that you can quarantine certain areas. They've already suspended travel just by economic conditions and flights and all that, making it inconvenient. People don't want to go anywhere anyway. I mean, who wants to go on vacation and get quarantined?
They've completely destroyed the airline industry. Yeah. And when will that ever come back? I mean, American Airlines sent out a notification to 25,000 employees that they may never be rehired. In other words, the airline is simply saying, we've looked at the numbers going forward. We're not sure we can ever open up again. And I guarantee you, their forecast is correct, because in a worldwide starvation process, you can't permit people to travel around. So the pseudo virus will be the explanation they give to the stupefied public, that no, you can't get on a plane, boats will be locked down, nations will be locked down, states will be locked down. In Australia last week, maybe the week before, they actually shut down the state of Victoria, so that now Melbourne and Sydney cannot have transit between the two. I mean, it was one of the most busy kind of communication between cities, physically moving back and forth. I mean, imagine like, you know, I don't know, New York and Boston or something. It was certainly the most populous transit between cities in Australia. And now that's just shut down.
But this is all over, again, all over a supposed virus, which, even according to the official numbers, which are bloated, have the lethality of a typical flu season.
It's 99.74 recover, and the 0.26 out of 1,000, which is 2.5 people, are comorbid. In other words, there's no guarantee at all they'd even be alive in a month, regardless of whether. So the idea of shooting yourself not in the foot, but in the head, because believing that is what the government is doing, is as a coherent response, is really nonsensical.
Well, this is why you have to.
Public should just start to start making preparations to get rid of this government, and because this is really a life and death situation.
Yes, that's what aren't realizing. They're whistling past the graveyard, thinking that normal politics can address this, or it's going to go back to normal. They already said that it wasn't. And, so at that point, you say, oh, really? But you know, you have to, what type of network could infiltrate, you know, 42 or 45 state governments? You know, well, we saw it. We've seen how it's, this is a plan that's been on the books, I think, for several decades, and they've tried it with the environmental hysteria. They couldn't get that across, so they hatched this plot, and they're achieving everything they wanted with the another, you know, invisible enemy, CO2. They weaponized that,
CO2.
and now the invisible enemy is COVID. But either it's neither of which are tangible, right? It's just there. It's what we're being told, and it's all a hologram. But you have to, what agency is there? How, what's the method by which you know, these people can be removed? You know, you'd like to, I'd like to think that, again, that there'd be some, when they come in with the power to do, technically it does exist, but you said I don't think the will is there. It's again, all these governors are just flagrant violations of their own state constitutions and the federal constitution. They have no legitimacy, and you know, just how they enforce them. A lot of these mandates are technically guidelines that they enforce through the licensing system, you know. And so the businesses themselves are complicit because no one wants to lose their license. But you're going to lose your business anyway.
You're going to lose life.
You lose your
You
life.
know,
I mean, it's like.
one thing about like a rebellion that could be successful against this process in this group is it will be international. You'll know that we are actually, because remember, mainstream media will be on it. If in fact you start having rebellion, you start having people basically taking back political power through the force of arms, right? If you see this happening, they will deny it everywhere, there will be just around the clock propaganda, either diminishing the activity or denying it. You know, these are crazy conspiracy theories. There's, you know, and of course they respond with force of arms. But what would really, you know, basically cause the people to know that there was a process that could actually take care of all of this would be international. Because what that would mean, Tim, is that an argument was coming out that was so solid and so understood by so many people that they weren't afraid anymore of just, you know, not risking themselves. They were prepared to go to battle because they could see that there was no future for themselves and their family. And they started to organize and there started to be resistance and it was international. If that could grow quickly, then you could actually imagine a change in
Well,
direction.
this is where the assault on ethnicity and identity and community has borne a great fruit for the global elite because people are so
Sure.
atomized. I mean, the individual, you know, can be fatalistic, but the man with a family and kids thinks beyond his own mere existence and willing to take a risk and to protect his wife and kids. But that's been disrupted, that sort of system. And so you no longer have that means of coordinating and organizing that you once
What a
had.
great point, Tim. That is such a great point because you can see now the reason for the atomization.
Reason for promoting global homo and homosexuality
Global
and feminism and these things,
the great
degeneracy, yeah.
white middle class, the destruction of the Catholic enclaves, the destruction of the family, the atomization of males and females in the different sexes. I mean, the further into the process of atomization a human is, the less able that entity is to resist because there's fewer and fewer things around him that have any relationship to him. And this was all done very deliberately. And so the influence, let's call it global homo, let's call it, you know, the destruction of the ethnicities, that influence hasn't been completely successful, thank heavens. And there are still, I would say, a majority of the people in these groups that could connect ethnically if they understood that they needed to do so to defend themselves. And I think that so this that would be another of the kind of the attributes of a reversal brought about by an understanding that you were about to be murdered. Mm-hmm. You see, that would be one you'd start realizing, wait a second, I'd better connect with friends. Who would I know that I could trust? Families would start to, you know, well, what about this cousin? Because you'd be looking for things that you could trust in terms of group cohesion, because you'd start to realize very quickly that groups are the only way to resist.
Yeah. Well, good example, just like if you had the old ethnic parish, there's no way they could have shut those churches down without force. It's in the suburbanized parish where people, they go to the church, but they're not really, they're atomized, they're dispersed. And so not going to church isn't a big shock. In fact, some people may even find it convenient. I have to get up on Sunday. And so it's not a big disruption in their life. Whereas if you're in an ethnic community where the parish was the center of life, that's a big disruption. It's also a big locus of resistance. And now it's, look at the bishops now. I mean, they won't even, when their statues were being turned, I think it was Bishop Barron asked that, he said it wasn't the job of the clerisy to defend the statues. That's the job of the laity. And there was an example during the ethnic riots in New York in the 19th century, that I think there was a bishop there who showed up with a bunch of Irish cops to defend St. Patrick's Cathedral from anything. And they were willing to come to blows. The bishop held a dagger in his hand.
Well,
and he was ready to be martyred to defend his cathedral. And, come a long way from that, baby.
We've come a long way. We've been attacked. And now we are facing the final assault. Mm-hmm. Hopefully the consequences are so grave that a large fraction of the public will recognize nothing to lose. We have to try.
What does it take? The red pill. It's so obvious. Yeah. I mean, I was thinking way back in April when I heard the report that the UK government had taken COVID off its high consequence infectious disease list. Okay. Well, that should stop it right there. Nope. 4 days later, that's when they issued the lockdown. Or when it came out about Neil Ferguson and his bogus modeling. Well, that was a red pill moment. Nope, didn't do it. Or the fact that, the overall mortality rates, or the fact that they were cooking the books with the COVID deaths. Nope, just goes on and on. They drone on about the science. Now with the mask thing, where all the science actually says, masks don't work in these settings, public settings. They're used for like operating rooms or when you're trying to prevent you from spread. Doesn't protect you. Nope. Mask mandates, they're air, although they don't do any good. You have to wear them. And even when Dr. Fauci declares them to be symbolic, doesn't matter. We have to wear them because it's an important symbolic gesture. And in a way, he's being honest there. It is a symbolic gesture. It's a sign of obedience.
Yeah. Yeah, all of the apparatus of media are still widely believed. And so if someone is on Fox or CNN or is in a, Barron's or the New York Times making a position that's insane, it's believed. Mm-hmm. They just automatically believe it. There has to be some way to shatter the conditioning. Because that's what we're experiencing, is a culture that has been conditioned to believe in insanity as real. And so, when this last week, which I said at the beginning of the show, I thought was particularly insane, particularly the Major League Baseball players all taking the knee. Mm-hmm. It was fascinating. I mean, think of the uproar when Colin Kaepernick took a knee.
Yes.
Right. Now you have the entire league doing so. And yet there's no uproar about it, at least not that's reported in the media. In fact, just the opposite. The media is saying this is a great, you know, we're moving into a new era. It's a dramatic new era. There's going to be real change and systemic racism will be destroyed. And of course, in doing that, we're also going to destroy the entire economic reality of cities. We're going to destroy the property value of everything. I mean, of course, we're going to get rid of food, too, in the process. But by God, systemic racism will be dealt with. So,
the mass famine, but we've dealt with systemic
mass
racism.
Nothing like mass famine to, like, reduce systemic racism. So it's the workers' paradise that once again is being handed to us by the same group. And they always do that just before the population gets reduced dramatically. So there is some activity. I mean, you can see it in emails that come to me. You can see it basically on the street. Different things are going on. Let's hope it accelerates because we don't have a whole lot of time. I don't know
when. Do you think they'll be voting online this year? because you can't have people going to the ballot boxes, right?
No, it can't come out. I think that there will be a presidential election. I think they'll have some way of bringing it about. But I'm also predicting that it's going to lead to chaos because I don't think Trump is being set up as the most racist proponent of systemic racism imaginable. Sleepy Joe will be. If he is a nominee, he'll be the opposite. I think Trump will win the election in the legal sense, but it'll be so chaotic that people won't accept it, and that will turn the U.S. into the conditions of civil war. You know, there'll be riots in all the cities. The army comes out. Then, of course, the Antifa supporters will come and defend. You know, their group, and now you've just got violence everywhere. And I'm also predicting that it will be at this time that the sex tapes from Epstein's islands will be somehow released and Donald will be one of the participants. I know this is far-fetched, but it's just, it's the kind of thing that they might do just to create absolute shattered psychology everywhere because they're going to be transitioning into perpetual martial law and they're going to need to create the greatest amount of causal reasons to do so. They're going to come up with, not just COVID, but real violence on the streets, real starvation. I mean, if you get into a situation where the food chains are broken down into the cities, well, now you really have to have martial law.
Yeah.
I mean, how are you going to distribute food? And of course, you'll also have the radical egalitarian structure that you've always wanted. No systemic racism. When the government is handing out food, we are all starving, lumpen proletariat. Mm-hmm. Everyone is equal. And it didn't matter what house you lived in, you're going to be in a tent. And you're going to be in line to get your food. And, of course, the food is not something you really want to eat. And now you're going to see the population start to really contract.
Well, I mean, the houses you live in and where you live depends on infrastructure that's been developed over the years. And ultimately, when the economy collapses, those things can't be maintained. And, of course, that'll be used as a pretext for relocation.
Yeah, exactly. And you'd better prepare for an end of the internet. That's the other thing that I've been asking people do is to set up some kind of communication or an identification of people in a thought circle, people who know each other, family members, and figure out ways to communicate because the internet, they'll pull the plug on that as soon as the violence starts.
And it's important to point out here that all these nothing that we're seeing here is inevitable because it's being set up. And there isn't like these are objective conditions that necessitate this.
It's a
planned demolition.
I Yeah, and I think exactly, and I think that the group that's pulling it off, frankly, is cowardly. These people have to be removed from political power.
Yes,
somehow.
I mean, I'd be happy to give them, let them keep their money, go to an island somewhere and frolic.
To get rid of them, they could have half of the country, the geography. As far as I'm concerned, look, we've been
give them a pension. Again, the problem is they have an outlook, and it's ultimately Luciferian. They'd rather rule in hell than serve in heaven. And this is why they're dedicated to destroying everything around them.
Yep. And if you think of groups that can reconnect to and then establish political power, you have to think of Catholic and Christian Americans right off the bat. NRA would be another group, veterans groups, police unions, and of course, rebellion within the army itself, the National Guard.
That's a bit important, is because in order to implement this, the people implementing this aren't going to benefit ultimately, right? I mean, they're on the chopping block as well, just maybe a day later. And so if there's some realization among the rank and file, I think that's probably why the local police is trying to erode, destroy local policing. Because you would talk about martial law and all this stuff. The point is that the mayors, the governors, they've let these cities, they let the statues, let the cities, the riots happen. And there is a medium approach to this, that is local policing, that's short of militarization. You know, but when you don't do the medium approach, you create the necessity for martial law. But there is a method by which police are trained to do this to stop a riot. So someone explained to me why was there a stand-down? Well, because they wanted the mayhem, you know, so they could have, you know.
The mayhem was obviously permitted. In fact, when you look at the video of the very first breaking of windows in Minneapolis, it was by the Masonic individuals who had the identifying umbrella on a sunny day, and they were going around and getting things started by breaking the windows.
We're in Philadelphia. They have these abandoned police cruisers just put out there. Huh?
Yeah. And of course the bricks, you know, they were left for people to use.
Pile of bricks. Yeah.
Right. So these things were, you know, it was orchestrated. And where it goes is also as clear as what the pile of bricks was for. It goes to starvation. Yeah. That's what's going to happen.
This is the function of the Kakistocracy, rule the worst, whereas these people are installed to maladminister, to misgovern. We had a show a while back about intentional misgovernance, and it's about strategy of tension. It's actually the government thrives off high crime rates, disorder, anxiety, and all this is about driving everyone insane. That's why if you're a rational person and you're asked to enforce a stupid law, like just little thing, if you're a teenager and you're working at a store and you got to bother people about wearing masks, put a mask on. The person may know it's stupid, but what that does to the person's psyche and morale and even spirit by having to impose a law which they know is stupid. And this is all part of the psychological warfare.
Yeah, and you're right. They are attempting to make us crazy because it's a giant distraction from this pulling of the plug on the food system. Mm-hmm. To start the starvation and the which will lead to the rioting and then the martial law. And so last week we talked about the existence and the need to look for strongholds. This would be a great week for anyone who, you know, is aware of the future to identify components of a stronghold. I mean, for example, the NRA. Mm-hmm. If you have a local NRA, I would certainly try to be in contact with them to see if there is like-minded individuals, because those are individuals that would actually be able to defend veterans groups.
By the terms of the lockdown, and I mean, we had a governor here that banned meetings more than 10 people. Now, when you have a political figure that's banning meetings more than 10 people, what he's doing, he's preventing people from conspiring against him. Organizing is a better word, against him. Well, in a political system, in a free political society, that's what you're supposed to have. But it's so self-serving and obvious. They're shutting down civil society so they can impose a tyranny.
Exactly right. Exactly right. That's why the right of assembly was ended, is so that we couldn't assemble, because in assemblies is where we would be able to create aggressive countermeasures against tyranny.
Yeah. What if you went to church and the church is just as full each Sunday after next and no one's getting sick? Huh? Wait, there's no crisis. But if the churches are empty, if the sports stadiums are empty, if the theaters are empty, the streets are empty, well, there must be a virus because the streets are empty. and the theaters are empty.
Everyone's
wearing masks. And yeah, everyone's feeling anxious and fearful. And they must be fearful of something. No, they're fearful of what they told exists. They're fearful of a story.
Yeah.
You know?
And the mask says very clearly, be afraid.
Yes.
I'm a potential bioweapon, and there is a threat to your existence that is out there. It's mysterious.
I can't look at you. I can't talk to you. Yeah. I can't communicate with you. And therefore, you know, what are we? Then we're all atomized, all enemies of one another. And we are
atomized. Yeah. We have been atomized.
And then the suggestion of mask wearing in families, and now families have to be broken up. That's a prelude to breaking families up.
Well, I mean, if you look at the grammar in that, they're talking about mask wearing as a prelude to actually physically separating families,
mm-hmm.
because they're saying, well, we're going to have to remove children from parents because, you know, there's too much infection going on inside these out of date nuclear families, and so we have the legal right to come in and take the kids.
Now, mind you, they're not sick. They just tested positive.
Of course not.
You know, we talked about that couple in Kentucky that was placed under house arrest, and ankle bracelets were monitors were applied to them because the wife tested positive after she submitted herself to a test, so she could go to Michigan to visit her mother, and then she refused to abide by some agreement. But mind you, the child, the husband, and the wife, none of them are sick. But now the state, the local authorities, the health commissars, are presuming to be able to imprison them in their homes. I'm not sure what the legal situation is there. I have to assume they're suing.
There's no legality. This is just raw tyranny and intimidation.
They apply the ankle monitoring braces after she refused to sign an agreement that she didn't find agreeable.
Yeah.
It's not an agreement then, is it? And she said like five police cars pulled up, like a dozen people showed up at her house, all wearing masks. This is the type of resources the state has to waste during an economic collapse.
Well, this is done as theater just to frighten the peasants. They have the large demonstration, mm-hmm. and all the publicity, and now no one will follow down her steps because they will fear this happening, when in fact 10,000 people should do it. Let's see them try to bring five squad cars to 10,000 people or 100,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
You see, this is the point. They cannot possibly exert real physical control. They can only exert psychological control.
It's mind control, yes, because if you had 10 million New Yorkers, just tell Cuomo to go stuff it.
Yeah, and that's what they should do.
Yeah.
So we're it's a critical moment, not so much in the nation's history, because this is beyond that. It's a critical moment in whether or not we're going to be alive in 24 months.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we have to start making preparations if we're going to do it. We need to resist the government, create organizations among ourselves.
Well, it's so obvious to me, and this is from the get-go. I was arguing the lockdown. What are you talking about? Even if it's as bad as you say, is it stupid? Because the lockdown would kill more people than any disease will. The collateral damage, it turns out it wasn't the lockdown. The objective was the lockdown and economic destruction and all the misery that comes from that. That
sure.
is the objective. That's people understand. And you know, it's all psychological. It's all mind control. But I mean, look at it from how do normal economy function? How do people plan ahead for businesses and marketing, who they're going to hire? None of that can happen in this environment, all the normal economic, and this is what they mean. You know, Klaus Schwab at the World Economic Forum presumes the right to redesign the global economy using the opportunity of this crisis to redesign the global economy under terms they deem to be more just and equitable. Yeah, I'm right. A bunch of billionaires are going to talk about equity and justice. Great. Right.
You know, it's just preposterous. Yeah. But we're so lucky that they were prepared, just almost incredibly, to be able to do this reset at just the right time. Mm-hmm. It's almost like it was all just one big plan. So we have a particular moment in time. It's critical. We use every minute. We need to identify groups that we can coalesce with. We need to raise awareness. Just do everything you can to raise awareness. Don't worry about being in a place that's uncomfortable. This is life and death. We have to start organizing ourselves to defend ourselves.
And don't get depressed. Angry. It's justifiable anger, and let that anger motivate you.
Exactly. Yeah. Depression is what they're trying to create. Yes. And hysteria. When people, that, you know, they look at this and they go, "Oh, I'm so depressed. I'm paralyzed." This is exactly what they want. Mm-hmm. You feel bad because you're not fighting. As soon as you're fighting, your real self will return. Your energy will be there. You have to fight. Once you're fighting, you will know what to do. Your energy will be there. You will be able to defend yourself. You've got to start fighting. Got to start fighting right now.
Okay, Joe.
Hey, Tim, we'll get them next week. Thanks, buddy.
Enjoy the weekend.
I will.
Get some sun.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.